Hello, Canucks fans. Pete here with Brendan at the Canucks Speakeasy. No Doug this week. It has been a while. Brendan, how you doing?
We're entering spring, or we've entered spring, and you know, Canucks have clinched a playoff spot. All three of us said that they wouldn't. Not that any of us thought that they couldn't, but I think we had so many years where we thought that they would. For me, I was just like, put up or shut up. And well, they put up, and they put up 102 points, and they still have seven games left to go. Seven games left. And
for me, it was reverse psychology. I remember saying that because, like, the last couple of years, I'd be like, yeah, they're a playoff team, and they always just piss me off, and they don't become a playoff team. And so this year, I was like, you know, we probably had the best version of the Canucks we've had in a while, but I was still, no, you fooled me enough times. I'm going to try the reverse psychology thing. And it worked. Yeah. Damn it, it worked. We are actually talking playoffs in April.
Hey, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me eight times.
Yeah. Eight times, a couple of GMs, a handful of coaches, many, many players. And here we are. The Canucks are a playoff team. Now, again, it's been a little while since we recorded. There's a lot of factors for that. Doug was away. I was away. Brendan was busy. Someone got sick. You know, someone else got sick.
We all got sick.
It was just impossible to actually have a week where we could actually even get two of us. And so we have no Doug again this week, but we were finally able to get two of us. Last time we recorded was right towards the end of February. So we've seen a lot in March. And I know we're talking playoffs, but...
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me?
There's concerns with this team as well right now with the way they're going. There's a lot of question marks. Like, I don't know who this Canucks team is. Are they a good team that's underperforming? Are they back to where they were? Are they now a defensive team that's struggling to score goals? Are they slumping? Or were they never an offensive team? Like, I've just got a lot of questions with them, and I'm hoping this last few games that they have can kind of bring a little more consistency. Like, there's things I like, but I think we also know the things that we don't like right now.
I mean, always when you have a team that plays a little more of a defensive style, and if we're being honest, you know, I mean, when you're missing your Vezina caliber goalie, I mean, you don't really have a choice as to how you're going to play. You can't open things up too much. You have to continue to play within that structure that you've been playing in, and sometimes with that, you know, your offense does dry up a little bit because the focus is so much on the defensive side of the game and doing those things right. And you know, you saw what happened in Vegas when they don't do things right. You know, things go awry, and you don't have a goalie back there that can save your ass. And again, not that game was all on DeSmith, it certainly wasn't. But I mean, I obviously think when you go into Vegas, the goal is to get through that first 10 minutes. The first 10 minutes is crucial when you go into a building like that, because the fan base is rabid, very loud. And the team knows if we can get an early jump on them, that crowd's going to get rocking, and it's going to be a very difficult environment for our opposition to play in. We saw the exact opposite of that a month earlier. I think it was March 7th when the Canucks went in there and got an early lead and didn't give Vegas much at all. You know, the key is you got to survive those first 10 minutes. And you know, when DeSmith gives up, you know, makes a really great save and then, you know, fumbles,
shovels it back
away
to them.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Exactly. Right. Which, I'll cut him some slack. You know, I mean, it's not a play that's going to happen all that often. And it was just, you know, unfortunate, but it can't happen. And it kind of put the Canucks on their back feet, because then all of a sudden things start, they start coming at you. And, you know, one thing that concerned me in that game is that Vegas were really activating their D on the rush. You know, they were sometimes going four wide on the rush, and the Canucks struggled to get back defensively and get back into to the structure that they play so well in. And, you know, it ended up in odd man rushes, odd man situations, and chaos. And, you know, it didn't, you know, obviously that game didn't end all that well. And then not to mention you get goals to get yourself back into the game, whether it was 2-1 or the goal that made it 5-3, and you give yourself a little bit of life. And then 20 seconds and 24 seconds later, you're giving up goals that essentially puts you back on your heels again. So there were a lot in that game, but I do look at that game as an outlier more so than anything, because we saw the game and, you know, people, rightly or wrongly expected the Canucks to go into Arizona and thump Arizona. And I never thought that was what was going to happen. And, you know, when you're a team that's known about it with a defensive identity, usually what your coaches want is going to want you to do more so than anything else is get your defensive identity back to the way you want it. At least I believe that's what good coaches do. And I definitely think they did. They dominated that game in Arizona territorially, shots obviously, but you know, it's still not creating as much in the middle of the ice as I want to see. A little too much deferring back to the point, not enough just, hey, we're going to throw the puck to the net with bodies and try to crash and create chaos. And, you know, until they do that, you know, I mean, there are a couple of guys, Joshua, who's very good at it and willing to do it consistently. I think Vasily Podkolzin has had his moments as well where he's willing to do it. Now the goals haven't come for him, but if he continues to do that and doesn't get bear hugged in front of the net where the ref watches, two refs watch it, and decide to not make a penalty call on it because they're useless at their jobs, then, you know, I mean, the pucks will start going in for him. You just have to go to those areas, and come playoff time, those are the areas that you score goals.
Yeah, you got a few things in there I want to unpack, and I'm kind of going to go backwards a little bit with that. Starting with Podkolzin, and I believe his stat line is something like 2 assists in 13 games or something like that, which is very much a fourth line stat line. It's not a first round pick stat line, but I've really liked what I've seen with Podkolzin. I think he's earned a spot in the lineup come playoff time. I think there's definitely a place for him, and you're starting to see a little bit more confidence with him. You're starting to see little hints of those mittens and the stick handling and what he can do. So very curious to see how Pods goes, and he hasn't come in or out of the lineup. There's been a lot of moving parts, PDG, Amon, Baines, couple others, you know, kind of moving around in there, and you know, Suter as well, but Pods have stayed in. So that's a pretty big testament coming from Rick Tocchet there. Odd man rushes in the Vegas game. That was something I hadn't really seen them give up that many in a game. Now Vegas is fast, but the Canucks were playing a defenseman down pretty much the whole game for that garbage call. And I know the video from the cross check in the Rangers Devils game has been going around, which is like, how is that not a penalty? But
they're Kucherov tonight with a hit, yeah, in the numbers. Obviously the Manson hit on Miller from a few weeks ago that only got a 2-minute minor. It's just, what the fuck are you guys watching?
It's wildly, wildly inconsistent. This has been a beef that I've had with NHL officiating for a long time, is that it's wildly inconsistent and arbitrarial. But regardless of that, Vegas had a lot of odd man rushes that game, and that was not the way the Canucks play. So I do kind of look at that as an outlier. Now, Arizona as well. That Arizona game last night, I didn't expect that either. I did expect more goals. Arizona had scored 19 goals in the three games going into that. So for the Canucks to go into Arizona and hold the Coyotes to one after they were averaging over 6 goals a game for their previous three, that's pretty good. And doing that as well with their number three goalie and limiting shots.
And not only that, they didn't give up a single high danger chance in the first 40 minutes of that game.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
And your second of a back-to-back on the road, that's no easy feat, especially against a team that has been scoring at the rate that Arizona had been coming into that game.
Mm-hmm. And the one other thing I want to touch on, just going back to the goalies and kind of mentioned Seelofs here, I don't put a lot of the struggles that the Canucks have had on the goalies. I think DeSmith's and Seelofs have both been fine. Now, DeSmith has made some mistakes, and you could probably maybe shave off a goal a game in there if you got Demko in there, which would change your fortunes a little bit. But I don't feel like either goalie that has come in with Demko gone has played poorly. Like I said, DeSmith has had moments. I think Seelofs has been pretty good as well. There's one goal from a bit of a weird angle I know he would like back. But I think the defense has played well. The concerns right now with me, amazingly, especially after the way the season started, it is actually offense and trying to figure out what to do. I mean, we all know that Petey just doesn't look right. And I don't, you know, I've often wondered if the Kuzmenko trade really affected this team in other ways, and losing Kuzmenko I know Kuzmenko didn't work with Tocchet's system, but that's a guy who can just kind of pop him in. And I know he's not a long-term solution with the club, but ever since that move, I mean, Lindholm isn't even playing right now. The Canucks really just seem to have been struggling to score. And that's kind of an amazing factor, is that all these lines are in a blender. We don't really know who the top six is besides, you know, half the bodies on any given night. It is going to be really interesting to see. And I know Tocchet is juggling right now to try and see what he's got, but it is really going to be quite interesting to see game one, what our lines look like and who starts skating, especially on Petey's wings, who's playing with him. Because I think you're probably going to see Besser and Miller back together for game one.
Yeah, I mean, that will be interesting to see what they do. You know, I mean, there were a lot of people arguing with me. Well, you know, Petey needs a winger. You know, if you give him Brock Besser, you go see what he does. Well, I mean, Besser's been on his wing for four or five games now, and it hasn't helped at all.
And that story, you know, and I just want to add on that as well. That's something the best players, it doesn't matter who's on their wing. Like Sidney Crosby could play with a couple of hobbits and he'd still get a couple points.
And he is right now.
Yeah. And that's what
Ricard Raquel and somebody, and I don't even know who the other guy is.
Yeah, and that's what your best players need to be. And that's what this mark right now is really clamoring for from Pettersson, is without Pettersson turning it up to another level in the playoffs, you're a one line team offensively for the most part.
I mean, I was having a chat with somebody today and talking about a possible PD injury. And, you know, I'll say this, and I mean, I don't, maybe there is something going on and we don't know. I don't know. I know Rick Dhaliwal had come out and said something about maybe that nothing that he has heard leads him to believe that there is an injury there. And the fact is, we have a sample size going back a few years now where he has struggled for stretches in seasons and has gone invisible, basically. And the speculation is the same every single year, that there's an injury going on or something's going on. And I do wonder, you know, if at the end of the day, it's just simply between his ears.
I was just going to say the exact same thing. I think it's between his ears. Yeah,
the great players the great players when they struggled, the elite players in the NHL, at least most of them, and Sidney Crosby probably being the best example, and not that we should be comparing the two of them, but still, you know, the way out of it is through hard work. It's through skating. It's through moving your feet. It's doing everything you can is right. Like I would have more sympathy for him if he was creating opportunities for his line mates and those line mates just simply aren't good enough to finish. But that's not what's happening. That's not what we're seeing. He's not creating. How much is that to do with the system that they're playing? The fact that they are playing a much more defensive minded system? I don't know. That would be a question for somebody else. But the fact is, there are a lot of times where he doesn't move his feet. And I know everybody's like, oh, that's so simple, that's so easy. Well, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not that complicated, that sports aren't as complicated as we make them out to be. And a lot of the time, the simplest answers are more likely the right answers. In this case is move your feet and work hard. And you'll find your way out of it because you have world-class skill that most people do not have. I mean, I've got, like, you watch him. Like, there was a game the other day. I think it was the Vegas game where Miller hit the post on his one-timer. And Miller's playing that right side looking for his one-timer, and he's moving. He's looking for angles. He's looking for shooting lanes. And he finds them, and he gets opportunities to get off his one-timer. And I'm thinking, you know, what is he doing that Petey can't be doing? Because Petey's so stationary. Like he doesn't move. There's no movement. Like the great players that have those great one-timers are constantly moving. They're constantly trying to find those angles, find those shooting lanes. And I just don't see it from him. He just doesn't seem engaged. And I don't think that's an injury thing. I think that's straight between the ears.
Yeah, I do too. I think one of the things I've noticed now, before we all, you know, jump all over Petey, I love Petey. He's one of my favorite Canucks in recent memory. He is doing some things really well. He is playing a bit more physical defensively. I don't think he's being
he's not a liability on the ice. No, and that's a thing.
You know,
he's not a liability.
So he's doing that. Now, you mentioned the feet moving. One thing I've noticed with Petey is he's still trying to do a lot of things himself, especially in close when he gets guys on him. He's trying to deke around them. And it, a lot of the times he is doing that without much speed or doing that flat footed. And that doesn't work. And no, I've seen this on the power play in particular, where he double clutches or he gets a guy in close and his first instinct is, I'm going to get around this. And how many times have we seen on the right boards over the last, well, the power play struggled for a while, but how many times have we seen Petey get under pressure and turn the puck over and then slam his stick or something as he goes back to the bench? It's happened a lot. So I do agree with the moving around more. Like Miller and Hughes, they have these incredible cycles on the left side on the power play where like they'll go like Hughes will go all the way down to the low hash marks. Miller will cycle back up to the blue line. They're moving. Then it creates open
Predicated on skating, right?
You know, yeah, exactly. And Petey has his movement, but his range is a lot smaller. He's kind of on the right side from like the top of the faceoff circle to the right point. He's only moving in this small range. It's really Hughes, which no one should be surprised with. You could put anybody on the ice and Hughes would be doing laps around everybody, but Hughes and Miller have a lot more movement on that side than Pettersson does. And I think teams have read that more, and I think the book is out on Pettersson that if you put pressure on him, he's likely, or there's a higher chance that he's going to turn it over than say a Miller or Hughes on the left side. So I think teams have that; they're looking out for that as well. And I think with that, you know, it's Petey's just got to be used to being that guy and being under this microscope, and he's got to figure this out a bit more. Again, he's getting points, but I mean, we just haven't seen him take over games like Miller or Hughes have over the last little while. Like the beginning of the year, Pettersson might have been our best player during October and into November. And they were talking about Petey MVP, and you know, he's fallen to probably the number four spot on this roster now in terms of MVP. I mean, you could even make an argument for Dakota Joshua with the way he's playing, you know, with reasserting him in the lineup, for getting in there. But I mean, he's not changing games the way that Hughes and Miller are, is my point. And that's what we want to see. And that's what we're going to need. And that's what we need Petey to figure out is, okay, you've got the system, you understand the system, but how do you use your talent, your skill set offensively within this system? Yeah, maybe that's it too. You know, maybe he's so focused on the system and playing that way that he's kind of forgotten parts of his creativity and his offensive game for now. But the good news is that should come back.
I mean, you brought it up earlier, and it's like, you know, when he tries to move the puck and he's not skating and not necessarily, he's not always stationary, but also even when he's not skating at pace, the book's out on him. You don't even look at the puck, skate right through him. And he's not, doesn't have the physical attributes to be able to withstand that sort of pressure a lot of the time. There were a lot of times where he could get away with, you know, stick, you know, I mean, just his amazing stick handling, but it's very hard to do that if you're not skating. If you're going at like, if you're not skating and you're putting yourself down to a level of the guys in the league that can't skate as well as you do, you know, and they're bigger than you, they have an advantage over you because they're going to skate right through you and they're going to take the puck away from you. And that has happened both a lot on the power play, but 5-on-5 and an even strength as well. And like, yeah, like, I mean, no one's bad saying he's an awful player. It's not like he deserves to get scratched or anything like that. It's just that we know we've seen it when he's at his best, what he is as a play driver, as a difference maker for this team. And we know how pivotal it is for him to be able to find that, because if he doesn't find that, their chances of making it very far in the playoffs goes down significantly. So it is imperative for him to find his game. And, you know, I mean, we've seen him come out of this before, you know, in years previous where he was struggling, and it's just, he needs to, first of all, get out of his own head. B, use his teammates more. As you say, don't over, you know, there's a tendency to try to do it all yourself, probably because he could get away with that when he was younger. I mean, not even at the NHL level, but prior to that, that's what he would get if he was ever slumping. It probably didn't happen often. You would just trust yourself. Well, you can't do that at the NHL level. You won't get away with that. So, you know, he's got 7 games left here to try to figure it out and hopefully get himself into a better spot. I think getting Demko back will help this team considerably, just to be able to have that confidence of knowing, hey, we've got a pretty good goaltender back there, that if there are mistakes, we've got somebody to cover our ass. We don't want to make many, but if we do, the odd one, he's there. So, it'll be interesting to see. We got, you know, the Canucks have a, you know, not the easiest schedule, but, you know, they should be able to do enough to at least win the division here.
Yeah, and, you know, the way, in a bit of a blessing in disguise with Demko going down, is it did force them to tighten up their system a bit more. Regardless of all the heat that Pettersson's taken, he's going to have a 90-point season. He's a 90-point player. So imagine if he's able to play consistently, what he can do. I think that's the thing that fans know, is this guy has the potential to be a 110-point player, maybe even more. But he's still somehow a 90-point player.
And if the power play had been going, which has been the biggest issue, probably the biggest issue for this team, if the power play was going for the last, I don't know, 4 months, probably going back to November.
Yeah, he'd probably be a 100-point player.
He would definitely, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about it that would. And I really do think that the power play does feed to a lot of the, feed to the rest of the game, not just that he plays, but it will allow 100%. These guys play, you know? You build confidence through, you know, through that power play. And I mean, that power play's been pretty, it's 4 of 10 in the last couple of games, but, you know.
It's
been
rough, though. It's The thing as well, as we know, the Canucks like to do like kind of a 90-30 split between PP1 and PP2. And it's a mixed bag. It's 4 forwards on PP1. So if you're running 4 forwards out for the 90 seconds and you don't score on the power play, it's going to be third and fourth line for at least the 2 shifts after that, which, you know, our third line, if it's the Bluger, Garland, Joshua line, that's not a bad line to chuck out there, but it does mean that you're not going to see those faces on 5-on-5 for a little bit. And that does affect the flow of the game as well. So if you're, it does, there are ripple effects from having these power plays besides the fact that you're losing the opportunity to score goals. But it's a frustrating power play to watch. That's, you know, I have a few concerns about this team right now, and special teams is right near the top. Pettersson is right near the top. If those things get going though, I think we're in pretty good shape. And there is obviously some of the bottom six guys that need to kind of get it going again. But, I think all that's tied together.
Yeah, I do think that not having Lindholm there does affect that bottom six, because I feel like the bottom six is a little bit in flux right now. They're not situated in a way that they're probably going to be, you know. So I do think there are going to be a lot of moving parts that happen. It'll be interesting to see how they make things work, you know, once Lindholm does come back, whenever that is. I suppose we could even say if, but I
think it's a win
at some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, you watch the power. And I was thinking about this, you know, on the weekend, you know, because I was watching other teams play. And, you know, the Canucks are dead set on having this power play with the bumper spot. And I'm watching other teams, and not every other team deploys their power play that way. And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, if you don't have the correct assortment of players to be able to play that power play style, then why do it? It's almost like you're beating a dead horse there. Or what I liked about when they scored the other night in Arizona, you ended up having a Garland as your net front presence. Well, okay, that makes more sense. Okay, because that puts your 4 most dangerous shooters all in a position where they can shoot the puck.
You know, screen. Yeah, he had a nice screen on
right?
that wall. Yeah,
and if they don't respect Garland's shot off that half wall, then they're just going to play man to man on everybody else. So there has to be a way of altering their scheme you know, if they don't have the personnel to do things the way that they want to do it, it's almost sometimes like they're pounding a square peg into a round hole and it just doesn't seem to be working. But, you know, as you say, if they can figure out the power play with their ability to defend 5-on-5, if they got that power play going, the team would be incredibly tough to beat. Because they're not giving up much at the offensive end these days. They're just not. They're holding, you know, we saw Dallas thump Edmonton 5-0. And they came into Vancouver last week. And that game was close.
Great game. I know we lost, but it was, I thought the games last week against LA and Dallas were both good games. And that's, again, the thing is, like, if you just get a little more goals, you know,
you get that power play going, it makes that difference, right? It makes all the difference.
Exactly. I think Dallas is scary good. So Elias Lindholm, Thatcher Demko, two pretty significant players out of the lineup. The Canucks are treading a bit above 500 without them. Now, you mentioned Lindholm in bottom six. Like, do you think they're going to do that? Or do you think there's maybe a chance that they try Lindholm with Petey and Hoglander again? Because what I'm wondering is that with Joshua back now as well, like, I think there's a good chance you're going to see that Bluger, Garland, Joshua line together in the playoffs. So is that that's your third line, but then does that mean that's really the fourth line now? And then Lindholm is going to be a 3C with like a Lafferty and Pod Colson or something. I don't know. I mean, it's not terrible, but I would almost prefer right now with the way things are going, to maybe have, you know, I'm just going to kind of spit some names out here and it could be whatever. It could be Miller and Besser with I don't know, maybe Lafferty. And then you can have, or Suter. Suter's a good one in there. Yeah, let's say Suter. And then if you had Lindholm and Hoggs with Petey, and then you had the Bluger line, and then you could have a fourth line with whatever you want. Maybe Suter could go down there because he could play center. Maybe Oman plays. But you got Lafferty, you've got Mikheyev, you got Pods, you got some different bodies who can go in there. And that's kind of more of a fourth line. I don't like the idea of if you're using Bluger and Joshua and Garland, I don't like using that as with fourth line minutes. And if you're using it as third line minutes, that means by default, Lindholm is going to be a fourth line center and only playing fourth line minutes, which I really don't think is the best use of him. So what I would really like to see going into the playoffs, I would like to see them try that all Swedish line and see what they could do a bit more. And I hope he gets back in time to try it, see who they can find on the wing with Miller and Besser. I mean, my dream world, it would be Pod Colson, but I don't think it'll be him. But maybe with the way things go, that's the best spot to put him in the lineup. I don't know. But I would really like to see that. I mean, this is a lot of what ifs and it coulds. But if that kind of sparks them and gets them going, I mean, hey, all of a sudden now you got three lines and then you got a checking line, which could be Oman, Lafferty, and Mikheyev or something that you chuck over the boards, which, again, isn't a bad fourth line, especially considering the past 8, 9, 10 years, Canucks fourth lines.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Tocchet goes about things. I mean, I'll say this: they were defensively, this team was an absolute menace when they were trotting Miller, Patterson, and Lindholm over the boards 1, 2, 3.
Yeah,
as their centers, and that's the only reason I think. I don't think you can have a guy who prior to his injury was the third best face-off guy since coming to Vancouver. Lindholm was over 60% in the draws, and he was doing that with a bum wrist. Now, obviously, you know, face-offs, it'll be dependent on what hand is the injury. Is it the top hand or the bottom hand?
That's a fair point.
And so I think that's the thing. If you can trot out those three guys and, you know, you have a former Selke finalist, you know, as your third line center. And obviously, I mean, you want him to get going offensively, but maybe in the end, because it seems to me that it doesn't really matter who you put Bluger and Joshua with.
Maybe you put
Lindholm with Bluger or with Joshua. Sorry, who you put Joshua and Garland with is what I said.
See, I was going to say, put, put them with Pettersson, maybe even, you know, see what they could do there. I don't know.
That,
but
I mean, you definitely could do that. There'd be nothing wrong with it. But again, my frustration with Pettersson is that you shouldn't need to put players with him to get him going. He is good enough of a player that he should be able to get himself going.
Exactly.
And make the players around him better. But for whatever reason, that just isn't happening right now. And but yeah, I mean, the nice thing is there are a lot of options there that at Tuck's disposal. But I really do get the feeling that it will be Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm, Bluger as your four centers.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because you're okay with putting it. I mean, yeah, ideally you don't want, you know, a fourth line out against another team's top line. But you're not going to sit there and lament that, because I don't think it would be that outrageous and outrageously bad to see that from time to time. If you know, Bluger and Pod Coles and whoever the third person running shotgun with those two are, you know, I mean, it's not the worst thing. So, but I just think if your identity, which is seemingly this team's identity is going to be going into the playoffs, which is, you know, let's protect our net as best we can, because we feel like we're going to find a way to get the goals. You have a three-headed monster down the, and that's an advantage that most teams don't have.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I mean, Bluger as a 4C is also pretty good. I just obviously, like a lot of Canucks fans, I love that line, but it doesn't mean you can't go back to it in certain situations as well.
Again, but I mean, after power plays, as I said, look at Garland and Joshua play. I mean, they've been good together, no matter
who
they've been with. Miller, Bluger, hell, they were really good to start the season with Pia Suter. And I believe then Pia Suter got injured, and then Bluger jumped into that spot when he got healthy. So, you know, those two have such an interesting dynamic and an interesting chemistry with one another, that the center is really there to be sort of almost like a poor man's Brendan Morrison to the West Coast Express. That, you know, hey, let those two guys do what they do. I'll be there to hopefully pot a goal if I can. But really, if I can help them keep control of the puck, and as important, keep the puck out of our own net when things go awry. You know, I'll just say this. Probably one of my biggest surprises of this year is just how smart of a hockey player Dakota Joshua is. And
it's impressive.
He has a hockey IQ that it's so impressive. Like, he goes on that PK and he just knows where to, his ability to hunt down the puck, know where the puck is going, almost be a few chess moves ahead of that PK, and always seems to be in that right spot to make a play on the puck. I mean, it really is impressive. I don't know what the ceiling is, or if we're sealing the ceiling, if we're seeing what the ceiling is for him right now. But man, it really has been impressive watching him grow from what he was to begin last year, hell, to be from what he was this year as a healthy scratch, to what we're seeing now, which is just a really good all around hockey player.
It's incredible, especially when he came in with maybe the guy out of shape at the start of camp, and this is a guy now who's moved to, depending on who you talk to, he's moved to the top of the Canucks priority list for re-signing. And ceiling, I think you're close to a ceiling, if not at it, but how long can he hold that ceiling for? I think he's got a few more years of that in the tank. And I think he could be that kind of, you know, a B-level power forward, which he's a bit of a Swiss Army knife. He's doing everything. I love him. I really hope the Canucks could keep him. Out of all the free agents that we have, he's the one that I want them to keep the most out of all the UFAs. Him and then Zadorov. I've been a big fan of Zadorov and the way he's played. I'd like to see that. But Joshua, for me, he's at the top of the list.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, he brings a toolbox that, I mean, these days isn't as easy to find as it used to be, you know, a true power forward. He's not Eric Lindros. He's not Todd Bertuzzi in his prime or anything like that. But he's really a Swiss Army knife in his ability to drive the net, go to the net, and very hard to move. And then be as smart defensively as he is, because he's, you know, really become a very, very good two-way forward. Physical, he goes out there and he'll hit all game long. And those players just don't come in abundance. And we've seen over the years, whether it's a Tanner Janot or you got Alex Tuck in Buffalo. I mean, you know, these guys don't come. These guys don't come. Tanner Janot especially doesn't. If you want to make a deal for him, you know, it doesn't come cheap. So it goes to show you that the rest of the NHL understands that the importance of these players and just how rare they are nowadays.
Yeah. Also, you mentioned Brandon Morrison earlier. Last week, JT Miller passed him on the Canucks all-time scoring lists. And I just want to bring that up because both Brandon Morrison and Ryan Kesler finished their Canucks careers with 393 points. Miller is now at 395, and he's done it in way less games, almost 200 less games than Brandon Morrison and almost 300 less games than Ryan Kesler. So, you know, I love to give JT Miller some love, but when his playing career is done, he's going to go down as one of the greatest Canucks of all time.
You know, I mean, people hated that trade, you know, when it came out. And I think it was mostly because they hated the general manager who made it, which is disappointing. Yes. And it was very unfair to the player. And for a very, very long time, continued to be unfair to the player. Because, I mean, that trade, you know, if the Canucks go on to do anything in the playoffs, it will go down as one of the greatest trades. You know, it just has to.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the players going the other way right now. It's a win for the Canucks already. And will
It was Luca Moldin.
Yeah. A couple other guys. Can't remember.
And that's the thing I think this market in the past has been so caught up in draft capital and, you know, you forget that you look at and Jim Benning wasn't a very good GM in a lot of ways. So we're not going to sit here and say that he was. But, you know, you look at right now with what this management team's doing, which is, you know, certainly a little more competent in terms of their pro scouting. There's a couple of things. I mean, they're the old school belief that you don't need draft picks to build a good team. You just need to have an eye for talent. And certainly draft picks help. No one's going to argue that they don't, but there is that old school mentality going back to, you know, we had Pat Quinn here. You know, this team has, you know, for the most part has never really been built by the draft up until, I mean, I can argue probably the 2011 team to an extent, you know, with the Sedins and Ryan Kesler, but you know, this team here is probably more so.
Yeah, and I mean, the Canucks have had more years where they didn't have a second-round pick than when they actually did. I mean, you look at a team like, you know, we already talked about Dallas a little bit, but they found guys in late rounds that as well.
And they're doing a very good job.
It's pretty impressive. And so drafting, you know, there's the argument as well that the more picks you have, the, you know, the more lottery balls you have in there. But regardless, that JT Miller trade is going to go down as one of the best in Canucks history. It looks like, hey, we haven't talked much about the blue line. We're getting tighter on time here. And we haven't really spent enough time on Quinn Hughes. And I just wanted to talk about Quinn Hughes a bit.
I was going to bring him up.
Well, I beat you to it. I obviously like Hughes more than you do.
Yes, son of a bitch.
He is, I mean, it's so nice. Just in general. Now, actually, I'll broaden this out a little bit. And speaking as the blue line as a whole, as we all know in Vancouver, we've just had miserable blue lines for a long time. And you mentioned pro scouting, and Ian Cole has had a little bit of a rougher go as of late. Carson Soucy, I think, has been really good. I think Zadorov has been a good fit for this team. The way Tyler Myers is playing this year is like you wouldn't know it was the same guy. So again, credit going to Foot and Gonchar on that front. But what Quinn Hughes is doing, I mean, I'm biased, I know, but this guy should win the Norris Trophy this year. And I don't think the Canucks have ever even had anyone nominated for the Norris Trophy that I can remember. I can't think of anyone who would be, but he will be at least nominated. If he's not, we'll probably riot. But I think Quinn Hughes, Norris Trophy, the last couple of games, I mean, three goals over the last two games, he's just doing everything. And I know for the most exciting player on the Canucks awards, I voted for him as well as team MVP and obviously best defenseman. But it's been that kind of year for Quinn Hughes, 86 points, man. Like, I mean, we are going to have a 90-point defenseman in Vancouver. That is just unbelievable. That is something I never, ever thought would happen. When I became a Canucks fan, there was Paul Coffey putting up 100 point C plus seasons against us, and I've never seen a Canuck get close to that. And here we are, Quinn Hughes, just killing it and looking like a great captain as well. I just wanted to give mad props to him because he is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. The Canucks MVP this year, in my opinion, their most exciting player. I mean, he's gonna pass Alex Edler at some point, maybe next year.
Yeah, I actually got it up here. He's closing in on Edler, or I had it up here. But yeah, he's not too far off. Let me find it again.
But, you know, I mean, he just like you watched that shift last night in Arizona, and I mean, on the winning goal, and you're just like, man, like I mean, he's unguardable using a basketball phrase. I mean, you can't stay with him. I mean, his ability to change direction and do it on a dime and do it so quick and do it so effortlessly. I mean, really is unbelievable. And, you know, you have to appreciate from a Canucks standpoint what you're seeing, because you're seeing obviously the greatest season from a defenseman that we have ever seen here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Hopefully he has a few more good ones.
And amazingly, along the way,
go ahead.
And amazingly, it's not even close. In the 54 years we've been fans, it's not even close. In the past week and a half or so, he jumped from 28th to 24th in all-time team scoring, passing three defensemen, Matthias Olin, Jyrki Lumi, and Dennis Kearns, to move into second behind Alex Edler, who he'll pass next year.
And I'll say this, you know, I mean, when you look at the eras where we've had our best seasons, some of our best seasons as defensemen, or if you look at the just years where our defense was really good, like the 2010-11 season, this season, you know, I mean, I hate to bring up the word, but it all comes down to structure. It all comes down to buy-in from all five guys on the ice, a commitment to playing well defensively, you know, because there were years, and I said this in years past, that the criticism on our defense, on Quinn Hughes not being a very good defenseman, you know, was really unfair when you're watching your forwards really not do anything defensively. And now you're seeing your forwards commit to doing the right things defensively, to not cheat into the neutral zone, to not cheat in the offensive end, not dive in when you shouldn't dive three guys deep, leading to odd man rushes going back the other way. I mean, hell, even the defenseman not pinching in inopportune times. I mean, that Vegas game was a complete outlier in terms of this way this team has done things all year, the fact that they gave up as many odd man rushes that they did. So when you have that commitment from your team to be good defensively, it's not surprising that your defense, your defensemen shine, and it allows a guy like Quinn Hughes to be more what he should be, which is a really great 200-foot defenseman.
Yeah, you see forwards playing defense and you see defensemen playing offense. I know the Canucks have one of the highest scoring blue lines in the league as well this year. And again, this is very refreshing to see that it is. Yeah, it's a lot of Hughes, but Hronek, I know he's been in a bit of struggle lately. But, you know, a couple of the other guys, like I know Myers is mid-20s in points and, you know, they're getting contributions. Zadorov has had a few goals as well. But yeah, the blue line for once, even guys like, you know, Noah Juulsen, I know he's come in and he's been flipping as a 6-7 guy. He's been really solid.
You would have to think he'll be a 6 next year.
I think so, especially with his cap hit.
You can argue, and I think there's an argument to be made. And Ian Cole, you know, has an amazing resume in terms of having that experience. But I could make it. I could make a case that Juulsen's the better option.
Yep. Yeah, me too. And he's a cheaper price tag as well. I think I don't have cap friendly up because I haven't really been looking at much this year, which is fantastic. But if I know Cole is, I think, 3.5 and Juulsen is close to a league minimum around 7.
Yeah, he's around 9. Yeah, I think Juulsen's around 9.
Yeah. So again, where next year, where again, every penny is going to count. And it's also nice to see some of these guys. You can start to see who can replace who, and who you've got in the system, and then worry about plugging the holes.
You're right. 775 for Juulsen.
He is pretty. It's a pretty good cap hit. So
just, and before, because I know we want to get on to the Freeport, but here I just want to do a quick shout out to Abbotsford.
Yes,
the Abbotsford Canucks have clinched a playoff spot. They've won 5 in a row. They're playing really well, and there are some guys that people should really be keeping an eye on. Not just the obvious one in terms of Lekkerimäki, who's, you know, come in and he hasn't gotten a point yet. He looked like he got a point, but they took it away in his second game.
He's looking good.
But he's looking good. But you've got guys down there that could be on the radar. And there's one, I mean, the obvious one is Atu Ratu, who's been on an absolute tear over the last couple of weeks, really starting to find his stride, which is great to see. I mean, that's what development's all about. I know a lot of people are clamoring to have him up. I don't think it's fair to bring him up unless there's major injuries, because he'd have to come up here and the system's different, and he'd have to learn that new system. And it's just not fair to throw a guy into a situation like that. A couple of other guys, one, Max Sesson.
That's who I was going to say. Yeah.
Who has been fantastic. And one of those guys, those true diamonds in the rough. And I would expect that he'd be a guy that if they don't sign either Suter or Bluger, could really challenge for that fourth line role.
Suter's got another year.
Bluger then. Yeah. If they don't decide not to re-sign Bluger, because I think Sesson's that guy you put with guys. And it's just that there's that level of trust there.
Arshdeep Baines found money, you know, a college free agent. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lekkerimäki's been playing with Sesson, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they have.
For his first few games. And I mean, he's a guy you put with, like, hey, you know, who can we put the new guy with that he can trust? Well, Max Sesson's the guy. And one other is he's played in a few games in Vancouver. Linus Karlsson. I'll be interested to see what happens to him. His contract's up. He's top 10 in eight. He's top 10 in AHL scoring. He's above a point per game this year, 56 and 54. And you know, the issue with him is his skating. The issue with, I had one guy say his compete level wasn't good enough, and I'm like, oh, that's bullshit. You clearly haven't watched him play. Compete is not his problem. He competes quite well. And there's no problem going into the corners. And we saw some of that in Vancouver. And just for him is, can he get that skating to that even a half step quicker? But it'll be interesting to see what they do, because his contract is up. He could easily just go back to Sweden and get a payday over there. So it'll be interesting to see what the decision is between those two. Between the Canucks and him, whether he's back next year. I do think, you know, if he can get that skating going to just a little bit of a higher level, there would be a useful player there at the NHL level.
Point per game players in the AHL, that's really tough to do. I remember I hated that trade when it happened, but regardless, it looks like we got the better player overall. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Again, we've seen this management move off of a lot of players and picks from the old regime. So Linus Karlsson really has to have impressed these guys if he's going to be sticking around, because we've seen them unload a lot of other prospects. You know, I'm thinking DiPietros and Rathbones and some of the guys that they inherited. So I know Karlsson wasn't a Canuck draft pick, but he was acquired by the Benning regime. So yeah, you're right. That's going to be an interesting one to see what happens. I know people have been chattering a bit out there about free agents and offseason and stuff. I'm going to worry about that once the season is over. We got the playoffs, man. We got to reprogram our Canucks brains here. We got the playoffs to talk about.
Hell, last game's 2 weeks away.
I love it, man. I love it. 2 weeks from today. All right, let's take it into the Freeport. And without Doug here, I'll go first. Thank you. All right, folks, it's time for the free pour open floor. And we haven't done this for a while. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about a place I went to in March, which now feels like a long time ago, I guess, because it was like a month ago. But hasn't been much happening here with the podcast. So you're getting a flashback to me being in the land of the bad guys from the first Mighty Ducks. Going to Iceland. I had a 3-day layover there on the way to the UK to visit my dad, my sister, niece, and nephew, and the rest of the family over there. And I figured, you know what? Cheap flight to London was going through Iceland. This time I'll make it work. I'll stop and check it out. Iceland is expensive. I got a few tips for keeping it on the cheap, which I won't bore you with. But my first time really exploring the North Atlantic, incredibly beautiful, really amazing part of the world. Just terrains and landscapes like I hadn't seen before. Really good brewery scene. The beer's there, very good. Icelandic beer, I definitely recommend, which is someone who makes beer. That's rather important for me. But really, really cool part of the world. If you get that stopover, I do recommend doing it for 3 days. Iceland Air does it for free. So you can just hop off, spend a couple days there, and jump back on to wherever you're going in Europe. But it's a cool way to do it. It's a bit pricier, but incredibly beautiful. Recommend it. If you're curious, just shoot me a DM and I'll yammer and yammer and yammer. Brendan, what do you got?
I want to bid a sad but fond farewell to, he wasn't Canadian, but he was an icon of a great Canadian TV show, SCTV. That is the actor Joe Flaherty, who passed away over the last couple of days. For most of us that grew up in the 90s, he'll always be known as the heckler in the Adam Sandler great movie, Happy Gilmore. But for a lot of people of the older, of the previous generation, he'll be known as the one of the great players on SCTV, along with, I mean, got John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, Andrew Martin, Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis, Eugene Levy. Just some really, really great actors to come out of that show. And for a long time, that show was the rival, and for the critics, better than Saturday Night Live, winning a lot of Emmys during their time. And Joe Flaherty, a big part of that. It's sad to see him go. He was older than I thought he was. I didn't realize that he was 82 years old. But, that show goes to show you how time flies by. So, yeah, just a bittersweet but fond farewell to Joe Flaherty. I mean, he won't be forgotten. He's got a ton of work out there that we all love.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. That's episode 165 of the Canuck Speakeasy Podcast, just about in the book, season 5, episode 19. Joe Flaherty, as soon as you start talking about him, all I could hear him saying in Happy Gilmore was, "You jackass.
Jackass."
Man, which was, of course, filmed in the Vancouver area as well.
Your club went further than the ball.
You're jackass. man. Folks, we're going to try and get some regular recording here, and with playoffs coming around, we're going to definitely be doing, I think, a little bit more here and there. We got to figure out a way to make this all work. If you want to hook up with us on the site formerly known as Twitter, I'm at Pete_Gass, and the podcast is at Canuck Speak.
I am Brendan, a.k.a. Jabo, at Jabo, J-A-B-O, _Vancouver. No YouTube this week, but still subscribe.
No. Yeah, we're gonna YouTube. YouTube's on LTIR right now. just like Doug, it seems right now. Also, if you want to reach out, Doug's at Doug Venn, and we do have the epic playlists for all the outro tracks on Spotify and Apple. That's the next Speakeasy outro music. Some people say that's the best part of the podcast is the music. Brendan, glad we finally got to hook up here, man. It's we'll have to be getting a little bit more regular with these over the next few weeks, because it is exciting, man. It is
hopefully
exciting.
and hopefully next during our next show, hopefully then I think that will be next week.
Yeah.
We may, and I mean may, be discussing a division title.
And how Pettersson has turned it up, and how the power play is going.
That'd be nice too.
And how Demko's back, and how Lindholm's back. Yes, all these things. They're all coming together. We're in this like itchy time right now. It's gonna be exciting. I'm gonna age terribly over the next couple of weeks. Playoff games in Vancouver, man. Playoff games in Vancouver coming up in just over a couple of weeks. All right, folks. Until next time. Hasta luego.